You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
You know, it's very odd. This is the second film I have viewed this year now that revolves around underground fighting.
Jordan, first rule of reviewing movies about underground fight clubs is we do not talk about movies involving underground fight clubs. You should know this.
Okay, but how do I talk about the movie? How do I do my job?
It's very simple. Everybody who's listening have now been admitted into the club, and we have to swear them all to secrecy. And if they tell anybody about this movie, we will hunt them down and kill them.
Oh.
Some of them have it coming anyway. Fortunately, this is a good enough movie that I think people will want to talk about it. I'm referring to a new movie from writer-director Max Winkler, Jungle Land, starring Charlie Hunnam, Jonathan Majors, Jack O'Connell, and Jessica Barden. I'm Marco, and stepping into the ring to help me discuss this film, I'm joined by Matt.
Hello. Hey, how's it going?
In this corner, we have Adrian.
Hey, hey, undefeated.
And our new rival, Jordan.
Why, hello there. Actually, I'm just the announcer.
All right, I want a good, clean review. No cheating, no hair pulling, no low blows, no sucker punches. You know the rules. Let's begin. Charlie Hunnam and Jack O'Connell are brothers. Hunnam plays a fast-talking sleazebag named Stanley, and his brother, nicknamed Lion, is a bare-knuckle boxer, and they get into some problems with Jonathan Majors' character, Pepper, who is a local mob boss that Stanley owes a lot of money to. Stanley is given the opportunity to wipe away his debt, and when Jonathan Majors' character tells them, you can go to Jungle Land in San Francisco, where your brother Lion will get to fight, but you have to do me a favor. You have to take this young girl named Sky and drop her off in Reno on your way down there. And then, of course, terrible things happen along the way. I like this movie, but I may not be for everybody. How did you guys feel about this?
I'm not sure if my brain has just been really fuzzy lately because of everything going on, and I'm just like not all lucid. It took me a while to realize this was an American film, considering you have Charlie Hunnam and Jack O'Connell playing siblings.
And Jessica Barden is also British.
Right, and Jessica Barden, who's also...
She was great in The End of the Fucking World. I did not recognize her at first.
Yeah, neither did I. I was trying to remember, and I really liked The End of the Fucking World. I was like, oh, no wonder I really like this performance also.
For a while, I was thinking, okay, this is going to be British... What's that one with Mark Wahlberg?
The Fighter.
The Fighter. I thought it was going to be kind of like that. And I'm actually happy that it's not. But it's also... I thought it was just okay. I don't think it's bad at all. I think this is a... Max Winkler, I believe he's done mostly TV and sketches and little indie things here and there.
He's done comedy mostly.
It almost feels like he's trying to break into the Derek Cianfrance type filmmaking. But making it a little funnier, and I do appreciate that. I think this is actually a pretty funny movie throughout. I just don't think it's anything too special, and for a while it seemed like it really was going to be.
This is a movie that is not unlike Todd Phillips, who directed The Joker. You got a guy who's known for comedy going, I'm going to do a drama, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to lean on the tropes of 70s cinema to make something serious. And he nails that. But like Joker, this movie feels very derivative.
Well, here's the thing. I like this above Joker. And one reason is, I don't feel like Max Winkler is constantly yelling with this movie, I am a serious filmmaker now. Right. Take me seriously.
Why so serious?
Okay, it's just like, dude, calm the fuck down. Just make a competent movie. I enjoyed, but yeah, it's definitely not blazing trails within the, you know, sports genre, you know, fight genre. I mainly like this movie for the dynamic between Charlie Hunnam and Jack O'Connell. And honestly, when I first saw this assignment come up, I was like, oh, so Charlie Hunnam's is going to be beating up dudes and, you know, ladies and, you know, and guys will get their lalas over his rippling pecs. And I was like, oh, wait, he's not?
That's smart casting, because you expect him to be the beefcake guy, the guy who does all of the fighting.
And honestly, he's better for it. He is much better for the role of Stan, and I think Jack O'Connell actually really worked as Lion. That, you know, there was an earnestness about him that was believable.
Yeah.
And you can actually buy into their brotherly dynamic.
Absolutely. They nailed that.
Some of the stuff where, like, they're waking up in the morning to work out and stuff, like, it was super effective in terms of their relationship. And it also really gave me the, like, the lockdown depression.
It's like, well, are they broke or destitute?
Well, they're squatters, and then the whole cast is British, and they're squatting in a building. I don't know why they didn't just set the thing in Limerick and be done with it, you know? But I liked the fighting was effectively choreographed. The relationship with, like, the mobsters was kind of interesting.
They almost seem kind of nice. Jonathan Majors, especially, he's never super intimidating. He almost seems reasonable at certain points.
Yeah, like, cool, calm, collected.
But then you remember, oh, well, they're kind of trafficking this girl, and they're definitely not good people.
The implication I took away was that they were childhood friends, like that they went back a little bit, so he was extending them some slack. This is a lot of stuff. Like, their relationship reminded me of Matt Damon and Edward Norton in Rounders. I even have written on my manual paper notes I took with a pen for some reason. I have, it's George and Lenny all the way down.
Yeah, I thought George and Lenny too, from the very first frame when we see Charlie Hunnam's character just talking about his dream that, you know, they're going to make the big time and they're going to have their own place and things are going to be great. Whereas the Jack O'Connell character would be the gentle giant to the smart dreamer. It doesn't quite do that. I was even reminded of a little film from the 70s called Scarecrow, starring Gene Hackman and Al Pacino, who plays a character named Lion. It's another road picture with a dreamer whose goal in life is to open a car wash. Here, we find out that the O'Connell character is smarter than he lets on and more ambitious than he lets on. His goal in life is to start a dry cleaners, whereas his brother is the one who's kind of using him.
Sky, the girl, she does kind of accurately point out that, like, he's abdicating a lot of responsibility and that his brother is a fuckstick, but he's kind of leaning back on the ropes and letting his brother do everything.
Yeah.
And so there is a codependency there that gets explored. I think this movie is a collage. It's definitely pieces we've seen. Mm-hmm. It does. It works pretty nicely, you know, pasted to the backboard, though. It's not offensively so. And I think this is one where you're probably going to just look at the trailer and know if it's up your alley or not. If you're an aficionado of, like, that sort of British ensemble movie, or if you like road movie, I call it the Rolling Triangle, where it's two buddies and one girl.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
I should say two platonics and one love interest, because the formula can be tweaked any number of ways.
There's not any real big surprises. It's fairly clear from the moment they introduce this young girl into the dynamic that she's going to drive a wedge between them, that Lion is going to find her attractive while his brother is going to see her as a threat to his control over what is in essence the family business. Even Lion points out, you say you do everything, but I'm the one who does everything. I take the hits. I do the punching. And we find out as the movie progresses that Lion probably could have gone pro, but somewhere along the way, Stanley fucked it up for him. And we realize that is a pattern. I think that they were probably orphaned very young. Stanley was the older brother. He took care of Lion. And over the decades, they've just kind of become dependent on one another and stuck in this dynamic that hasn't allowed either of them to grow and is certainly holding the lion character back.
As someone who likes, well, on and off, I like Charlie Hunnam. I rooted for him after Green Street Hooligans, but then he just kind of became another kind of it actor. It's nice to see him come back and do a, I would say, a pretty great performance, especially Jack O'Connell, too. Jack O'Connell, for me, has just been great performance after great performance. If anyone has seen Start Up, I definitely recommend to go check that out. Some of the scenes that they have together where Charlie Hunnam is kind of just yelling at him, it's worth seeing the movie almost for that alone. If you like good performances, this is one of those movies where it's like, it's going to have scenes that have you invested just based off of dialogue in its own. It has a couple other highlights. There's a scene where they're in a bar and there's a character played by Nick Mullen who's trying to confront, well, not really trying to confront them, but the girl Sky is saying, like, hey, this guy said something about me which is not true to Jack O'Connell, and kind of setting up a fight. And that whole, are they gonna fight, is this gonna be a brawl, is this not, I thought was really entertaining, especially seeing Nick Mullen, who is like a smaller actor. It was kind of funny seeing him in a role like this. It's fine for what it is. It's just, it's definitely not gonna get any kind of Oscar nomination. And for a little bit, it feels like it wanted to. I'll say this too. I think the score is fantastic. I think this has such a beautiful score, with a lot of like wind instruments, a lot of trombone, trumpet. I dug it a lot.
I also wanted to add, I thought Jessica Barden was really good. I mean, yeah, she's fantastic, but honestly, it really is more about the brothers, and I think that's a driving force of this movie. I will say, I could have used a little bit more Jonathan Majors. You know, I reviewed Lovecraft Country Season 1. Absolutely loved him in it. When I saw him here, I was like, oh my god, yes.
This was made before Lovecraft Country. This was something he made shortly after Last Black Man in San Francisco, but before anybody could have seen it.
That explains a lot.
They couldn't get him to do this small role now. I'm sure they're going to promote the fact that he's in it.
you are pretty right.
But they got him at the exact right time, and he plays a really level-headed type of mobster, just intimidating enough, just smart enough to be believable. In those three movies, or three projects, he's demonstrated an extraordinary amount of range. Max Winkler, if nothing else, has assembled a really good cast, and you need to have a good cast, because this is not your typical boxing movie. It's not a sports movie, cliche-ridden sort of, you know, rah-rah, crowd pleaser type of movie. This is the kind of movie that in the 60s and 70s would be a pretty regular Hollywood offering, but since the 90s has become more of just an indie type of deal, a road picture about two brothers and the woman who comes between them.
What this really kind of reminded me of would be like an older movie, like you're saying, like specifically like you saw, yeah, some you know, like those early Clint Eastwood ones where he was a boxing trucker, or Hard Times with Charles Bronson. It was sort of in that cut. I thought it was missing an opponent.
There's no Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was expecting the standard trope, like it would be the guy he fought and lost to before when he was going to turn pro or something.
Yeah, this is an American tragedy. It's just a small-scale street corner tragedy, and it does have some hope at the end.
I made a specific note to shout out the guy that plays Yates, the mobster they're taking the girl to, is off the chain, just creepy old man,
yeah,
vibe.
Oh yeah, I looked him up. He's 90 years old. The dude was like doing stuff like Camelot in the 60s. He's an actor who has been around a very long time.
Yeah, John Callum is fucking great. And if you need a sleazy old man, well, he actually fit the bill perfectly, yeah, here. I will say, yeah, as with, you know, you could see this movie going a lot of directions. And one thing I'll say, I'm glad we didn't have that opponent to overcome, because with this type of story, how it's grounded and how you see it go, it wouldn't make sense. It just would not fit at all. Yeah, and there's only like possibly two ways you can see the ending going. And I will say the ending we got, I was actually glad to see that, because it is a bit of a mixture of, hey, are we going to get a happy ending? Are we going to get a tragic ending? Oh, we got a little bit of both.
We're going to get the most realistic ending.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Without spoilers, they sort of do the minimal possible redemption arc, if that makes sense. And I thought that worked pretty well.
That's one of the strengths of the film, that it doesn't necessarily rely on all of those tropes. Yes, we've described how many other movies it's lifted from. As I said earlier, it's very derivative. You can definitely tell what has influenced the filmmakers, but they do a nice job with it, and they don't hit all of those sports cliche beats. And it's really a two-hander with this extra third character to complicate the dynamic. You never doubt that these two brothers love one another. There's no, like, big story arc here. It's just a very simple tale of, do we choose our dreams, or do we help this young woman who is definitely in a terrible situation? And she's no shrinking violet either. We see that she tries to manipulate them. She tries to escape. She tries to take her own life into her own hands and is largely successful.
There is no pure angel here.
I mean, the villains don't even seem terribly villainous, except, of course, the Yates character who comes in towards the end.
I do have a note that these guys are not actually very good at crime. Like, if Yates is real, he wants to kill Lucky.
Yeah.
Because Lucky didn't, or Pepper, rather. Like, all Pepper had to do was send that other guy with them, the guy that gives him the keys to the car. That's what the real people would do, you know? But then you don't have a movie.
You get the sense that Yates is Pepper's boss, or at least on a higher level than he is. For such a sensitive mission, are you going to send this bullshit artist who has a reputation for not delivering? The Charlie Hunnam character is such an obvious loser, despite all of his efforts to be successful. It's clear that he's just not as smart as he thinks he is. And you're right, Matt, this would never actually go down this way. What would happen is Pepper would go to one of his goons and say, put her on a plane, we'll be in San Francisco in a few hours, and we'll be back before midnight. This will all be behind us.
This business of the guy's going to win him 100 grand, so they give him 200 bucks and tell him to hitchhike if he spends the 200 bucks. If they think he can win the prize fight, they go with him, and they don't let him get beat up by some mechanic over impounding his car, you know?
Right. And they don't put his shitty brother in charge either, because he's proven that he's not reliable.
I just dealt with that plot hole. I decided it was a disc-shaped explosion, and I was just going to not worry about it.
Yeah.
They give him a Land Rover and a glove box with a gun and an envelope full of cash. It would have been cheaper to just get a flight.
Well, then, did you hear, when they tow the Land Rover, the cop says it's stolen, which was setting him up to fail, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this whole thing is just fucked. The Jonathan Majors character gives some kind of explanation for why he did it, but it really doesn't make any sense. It's there because if they don't do that, you don't have a road movie. And that's what this is trying to be, a road picture.
I do have a road note about the Reno locations. My notes just say, I've been to that casino and it sucks.
Which is true. Oh, my note was not enough Lieutenant Jim Dangle.
Yeah, he would have put a stop to these shenanigans.
Exactly.
I mean, this movie feels so much like a 70s picture. It's almost surprising when somebody whips out a cell phone or you spot a sign that has, like, the business's website listed on it. It's really kind of weird that way.
I will say, I will give a special prop to the two awkward dinner scenes in this, the one at Sky's home and the one in, like, the family pizza place. They're very well acted and they're very tense and they're just cringe inducing.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those, like, if you ever see a guy lose it that way in public, you're just like, for you, bro, stop for you. Like, stop for all of us, but stop for you.
Yeah, that's the best part of the movie.
When we first meet Lion and Stanley, they're working at a factory that makes tea towels and other fabric goods. They're sewing. That's how I know this movie isn't realistic. Those jobs all went to China years ago. Maybe there's a few left. I don't know. This feels like somebody wanted to make a movie that was about Americans at the bottom rungs of society, but they've never actually been there. Nobody ever goes to a Walmart. You never see a dollar store. Everything looks like it's been sitting around from the 1970s. it's kind of a movie about movies, and yet it's done so earnestly, I couldn't fault it too much.
I mean, I think they were in Lowell at the beginning, so eh. It does kind of look almost like it looks in Fallout 4.
This is the new DLC for Fallout New Vegas. We go to Reno, and you have this quest to take this girl away from a pack of ghouls, and while you're there, you join a boxing match. Why don't we go ahead into final thoughts? Jordan, go first, please.
Yeah, you keep bringing up the 1970s and comparing this to like a 70s film. This is essentially Midnight Cowboy, except, take out prostitution, add in underground fighting. Essentially, Charlie Hunnam's Dennis Hoffman.
And all the male-on-male touching isn't erotic.
It's your opinion.
Well, I gotta reevaluate my grade now that you bring it up. But the movie is fine. I say, really just watch this for the acting. There's not much else you might get out of it. I will say, I haven't talked about my thoughts on it, but the fighting is really good. It is well choreographed, and it is nicely shot in that I can actually see everything that's going on. Nothing's frantic. I can actually feel like, oh, these guys are going to just beat the absolute shit out of each other. So I appreciate that. Like I said, acting's really good, but it's mainly that brother dynamic between Jack O'Connell and Charlie Hunnam that I would say, yeah, maybe rent this movie for. Definitely. So I think I'll give it 6.5 out of 10 rolls of wrist tape.
Okay. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I really liked the portrayals in here. Like I said, it's a piece of assemblage. It's essentially a collage of other movies. And we've rattled a bunch of them off. It's too good to be mean to, but it's not good enough to go like, go get it VOD day one. I'm going to give it 7 times that you saw a guy with a duct tape bandage and it didn't bode well.
I hate when that happens to me. It never ends well.
My appendix is doing just fine.
Adrian, what were your thoughts on this?
This isn't quite The Fighter. This isn't really bad. I think if you're going in it to watch Charlie Hunnam and Jack O'Connell, you're going to get something out of it. This has a few great scenes, like we mentioned. The scene in the family restaurant, I really do think, is the highlight of the whole movie. With that being said, this is more of a acting and dialogue film, because it's definitely not a boxing movie. If you're going in and thinking it's going to be another Rocky installment, you're going to be disappointed until the last maybe 5 minutes of it. But it's still worth a watch. It's definitely something that I enjoyed watching. I just don't know if I'm going to be revisiting it a lot or anything like that. But still, it was decent. So I'm going to give it 3.5 cameos by Nick Mullen, who I'm still surprised he was even in it. He's a little indie actor. I'm glad he's doing work. Out of 5.
I think we've all pointed out that this film owes a lot to other films that came before. This feels like when you go to a store and you buy a vintage outfit, but it's actually a new outfit that's just designed to look vintage. This movie is a suit that fits very nice, looks very nice, but is clearly assembled and stitched together from pieces of other better movies. But it's so well tailored and looks so good on the characters that you really can't fault it too much. I ended up enjoying this quite a bit. It's a tight 90-minute film. Even though it features a boxing character and his manager brother, it's not really a boxing movie. It's there more as a flavor. It gives us some insight into these characters, but I do feel like these characters were written by someone who's never been poor and acted by people and designed by people who've never actually been in modern day environments where poor people reside and work and struggle. It feels like a movie that knows misery from the 70s films that they've watched, and they've tried to put it together in a very tasteful package and a very tasteful simulation of a film from that particular era. On that level, it succeeds. Is it something you should go see day one? Nah. But I do think it's a good acting workshop where you have multiple actors doing really good work with the material they've been given. And that alone, the chemistry between the cast, is what drives this film. I'm going to have to give this 7 out of 10 annoying
ugly little rat tails.
God, that was the fucking worst. Just give me 2 minutes and a fucking pair of scissors.
You don't even need 2 minutes. That's just like snip. That's like the barber in Coming to America who just cuts off Eddie Murphy's ponytail and goes, that'll be $10. You know, he just clips it off and throws it over his shoulder. It's done.
You might need 3 to 10 minutes if that guy didn't want you to cut it, though.
See? Yeah, see? That's why I said 2 minutes.
Someone's got to hold him down. But anyhow, thank you for listening. And remember, you can't talk about this review, or else we'll find you and bare-knuckle brawl you to death.
I know where you live.
But really, please talk about our review. You're not allowed to talk about this review, but you are allowed to comment. You are allowed to repost it. You are allowed to share it with friends.
Absolutely.
Graffiti. Graffiti about us is welcome. Just assist us in ascendance to culthood.
And whoever tattoos Chris Cox on their bicep gets free membership for life.
This offer was made as a joke and is not valid in any part of the known universe. Terms and conditions may apply. If you get a tattoo of Chris Cox anywhere on your body, that's on you, buddy. Figuratively as well as literally.